Okay. The topic for this afternoon is joyous effort. So I know it's after lunch, but you can't fall asleep. You have to have joyous effort. Okay. So in the... Of the six far-reaching attitudes, joyous effort is the fourth one, and it's very important. And they say that it's something. Joyous effort is something to be practiced in relation to all the other good practices that we do. In other words, we need it to supplement and enforce and stimulate and incite all of our virtuous practices. So the name joyous effort itself gives you some idea of what we're looking at. Yeah? I mean, when you think of joyous effort, what do you think of when you think of joy? And what's the body language of joy? What's the feeling in your body of joy? Yeah, you know, bright and light. Okay. And effort, there's energy there. Okay. So joyous effort isn't this, is it? You know? So, you know, it's a state of mind, but think also of how the body language is and how it shows in our physical energy. Now, we have a certain amount of joyous effort already. Sometimes we put our joyous effort in a variety of different things, don't we? You know, the technical description of joyous effort is, you know, taking delight in doing constructive actions, taking delight in what is constructive or good or virtuous or wholesome or whatever you want to call it, okay? So that's the definition of joyous effort. But when we think of, if we use the term in a broader way, yeah, where do we put our joyous effort currently? Where do you have the most joy in your life? Where do you work the most easily? Attachments, you bet. Isn't it? You know? Attachment. Ooh, goody chocolate cake. I am wide awake and raring to go, and I have lots of joyous effort to get my chocolate cake. Okay? So whatever your version of chocolate cake is, if it's, you know, a higher salary or a promotion or, you know, a relationship or who knows what it is, we have lots of joyous effort. You know, something that we're attached to, something out there that we think is going to bring us everlasting happiness. We are not at all lazy about going after, are we? You know, we don't kind of hem and haw and, oh, well, I can go out to the store and buy chocolate cake tomorrow. It'll still be there. We don't think like that, do we? Yeah. Or, oh, well, so I don't see Buddha Boy. It's, we coined that phrase after one retreat, I think. You know, so you don't see, you know, the perfect spouse, the perfect mate. Well, yeah, it's okay, you know, they'll still be around in a year. I can go do it then. Yeah, we don't think like that, you know. Attachment's there, boy. We are there right with it, you know. We don't fall asleep. We don't get lazy. We don't procrastinate. We're right there. Okay. When it comes to Dharma, how are we? Oh, the alarm clock went off. I don't feel like waking up. I'll meditate mañana. Yeah, so we have the mañana mentality. I'll do it tomorrow. I went to retreat last year. I don't have to go again this year. It's the same old stuff, you know. We never think, oh, I ate chocolate cake yesterday. I don't have to eat it again today, do we? But about retreat. Oh, it's the same thing this year as it was last year. Nothing new, you know. Teacher just says the same old thing again and again. Ignorance, anger, and attachment. I heard it before. Okay. So it's interesting, isn't it, you know, how the mind is. And yet at the time that we die, what is it that's the most beneficial to us? When we die, if you're surrounded by 20 million chocolate cakes, you know, and again, we all have different attachments, so your own version of, you know, chocolate cake, whatever it is you're seeking. Okay. You're surrounded by 20 million of them. Does that benefit you at the time that you're dying? It clutters the room. Yeah, but it doesn't really do much benefit. And at the time we die, who wants to think about chocolate cake anyway? I mean, that's kind of long gone. At the time of death, we want to be able to have a peaceful heart and a peaceful mind, don't we? We want to be able to look back on our life and say, you know, it was a life well lived, and I had kindness, and, you know, I refrained from negative actions, and I rejoice at what I was able to do in my life. I rejoice at the love I was able to share with people. And now it's time to let go and go into another life. And I want to be born in a situation where I can continue developing a kind heart, where I can develop wisdom. Yeah. We want to be able to die with a positive aspiration, don't we? And looking forward and to, you know, dedicating the good things we did in our life so that we're able to continue with that good energy in future lives and be able to practice a spiritual path then. Yeah. So to be able to do that at the time of death, then we have to practice it during life. Isn't it? You know, it's not that at the time of death we can say, I dedicate all the virtues of eating chocolate cake for a good rebirth. Yeah, it doesn't work. So we have to be able to look back at our life and have some sense of rejoicing, which means during our life, you know, really putting our energy in a good place and living our life joyfully. Okay? So I think it's quite possible to take, you know, to be delighted in doing what's wholesome. Yeah? Because if we think of the benefits that we derive both now and in the future from, you know, transforming our mind, then we're really enthusiastic to do it because, you know, we want the benefits. We are good consumers, aren't we? And if you know, I mean, if they tell you all the benefits of chocolate cake, we go after it, yeah? And so if we understand the benefits of training our mind and developing our good qualities, then, you know, like people who, you know, want to run to the grocery store there's a good deal on Mercedes, you're going to go out and buy one. When we understand the benefits of practicing the Dharma, then we run after it in the same way. Okay, so it's quite important to really think of the benefits of our spiritual practice and the results of it, what it brings. So I think we can start with our own experience right now, you know, and most of you, not everybody in the room, but most of you have been doing some kind of practice for a while. And so just think of the benefits that you've derived and how you've changed from the practice that you've done. Okay, so we can see, you know, just a little bit here what people have said, the kind of benefit that comes from practice. Okay, now imagine amplifying that benefit. Yeah, if you've received as much as you've received so far from your practice, then what would it be like, or could it be like, if you continue along this vein and continue practicing? Yeah. Well, what kind of benefit do you think you could derive, or what kind of person do you think that you would become if you continued with your practice? Yeah. All those nice people turn into Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Yeah. So you think that, like in looking forward, that that decreasing of the, of self-centeredness could be a really lovely thing to happen. Yeah. Yeah, self-centeredness is pretty painful. You know, it would be nice to have a mind that that really cherishes others. Mine would be a lot happier then, huh? Yeah. What other things could you look forward to in your practice? If you continued along the same vein, yeah. Mm. She said it would be really cool to be like Mother Teresa. Huh? I think of Mother Teresa's qualities. Pretty amazing, you know, to do what she did, to be able to do that with ease and grace. Hmm? Yeah. Okay. So being able to tune into people better. Yeah. What else? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So becoming more accepting is a benefit you've derived already and something that you could look forward to gaining even more in the future as you continue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'd be so freeing, wouldn't it? To not have attachment. I mean, just think for a minute. How nice that would feel inside. Or maybe you don't believe me. I give up attachment, then how am I going to get any pleasure? But, you know, if you really think for a while how painful clinging is, how painful attachment is, just think of how nice it would be not to have it. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So developing much more equanimity, opening, being able to open your heart to everybody. Yeah. Okay. So when we sit and think a little bit, you know, and I mean, not all of you have answered out loud, but try and think in your own mind too, you know, how you've grown and then what you can look forward to in your practice. And I think when we see the benefits we've derived and the benefits that we can, you know, develop in the future, then naturally, you know, joyous effort comes because we want to go towards what we see as beneficial. Okay? Because it's that same kind of mind of, you know, when you see the benefit of making money that enables you to go through all the hardship of getting an education so you can get a job. Or, you know, when you see the benefits of having a nice fat paycheck, then you go through all the difficulties of having a job. And, you know, you wake up in the morning and get out of bed. You never say, oh, the alarm clock went off and I don't feel like going to work today. I'll do it tomorrow. Yeah. Why? Because there's some sense of joy. I get a paycheck at the end of the month. Hmm. You know. So what we're getting at here is, you know, focusing the mind on the benefits to be derived from our practice, and then the mind is joyful, and a joyful mind does things easily, and a joyful mind has the ability to go through difficulties. Yeah? And I think that's a very positive attitude to have, to be able to sustain our effort over a long period of time because we have joy. And so, okay, there are ups and downs in things, but we don't just kind of give up when we hit a down point. Yeah? Why? Because we're aware of the long-term benefit of the practice. So we're willing to hang in there. And to really sustain a Dharma practice over a long period of time, that vision, that long-term vision, that motivation for a long time, and that ability to see the benefit we can derive over a long period of time, that gives us the energy to continue. It's funny, when we hit difficulties, sometimes we just kind of go, and we fall apart. It's like, now, but you were saying, I have my view of how the future should be, and it's not turning out that way. And I'm like, yeah. And then this fear that the situation's gonna overwhelm us, and you know, we're not gonna be able to handle it, and all these preconceptions and fears come up, and we get really tied into a situation. But I think when we have that, the bodhicitta motivation, and when we have that vision of the practice and what we can develop, then we go through a bouncy or a rough point time in our practice, and we're still able to continue. Yeah, and the rough times in our practice come not because of the Dharma. Okay, like when we have a rough time in our practice, we blame the Dharma. Oh, it's just too hard. Or, you know, I'm pushing too much, or I'm going to too many classes, or I better slow down, I better enjoy life more. You know, we have all these things that we say to ourselves. But it's not the Dharma that causes the practice. It's that causes difficulties in our practice. It's our defiled mind. Okay, because remember that the Dharma is the true cessation and the path to peace. Okay, the path to peace is not going to cause problems in our mind. If we don't practice it correctly, that can cause disturbance. You know, if we get it mixed in with some of our disturbing attitudes, that can cause upset. Okay. But just by the fact that we're in cyclic existence, we're going to go through hardships. So it's not the Dharma, it's not our spiritual practice that causes the difficulties. Difficulties come because it's the nature of cyclic existence. And, you know, difficulties come because we have a mind that is uncontrolled. And we have, you know, we might have an external difficulty that's coming as a result of negative karma that we've created. So it comes back to the mind in that way. So we have a difficult situation to face, but then our mind blows it all up and completely freaks out about it. Yeah. And so we start out with something small, and then our mind writes all these catastrophic stories about it and blows it all up, and it's, you know, really, and we go nuts. So, but that doesn't exist out there in the situation. So if we have, you know, the bodhicitta motivation, and we have a sense of the benefit we can derive from practicing, then instead of letting our mind do all this, you know, creative writing of horror stories, we stop it because we realize that it's just the mind doing that. And we're seeing the benefit in our practice, so why divert our energy into, you know, creating melodrama starring me? Well, let's put our energy into something that is going to bring us actual joy. Okay? So practicing the Dharma means working with those situations of hardship. Okay. We sometimes think that practicing Dharma is sitting down and, you know, doing a visualization or saying some mantra or studying a text or teaching a text or, you know, bowing or something like that. Those are just the external activities, you know. Practicing the Dharma means transforming the mind that is doing them and using the mind in whatever we, you know, face in our daily life. That's practicing the Dharma. And so that's important to do. Apply the Dharma when we have unhappiness. Apply the Dharma when we have difficulties in our life.